Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
The Word is proud media partner of Latitude Festival. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.latitudefestival.co.uk.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
This is The Word Podcast. I'm David Hepworth. Answer your names. Alex Gold.
Hi there.
Fraser Lurie.
Hello.
We're actually going to start with this podcast with something we never, ever do, which is a menu, okay, of what's going to be covered in this podcast. Coming up later in the show, as they say on the radio, we got an interview with and a couple of numbers from John Hyatt. We've got details of how you can share our extraordinary Day on the River later this month. We're going to talk in a little bit about what's going to be happening at Latitude, for those of you who are joining us at Latitude this weekend. But first, Fraser, you spent the weekend working on this mammoth project for the site.
Yes.
The 40 Noises That Built Pop.
That was a lot of editing.
I bet it was. Now, this is based on a piece that's been in the magazine in two parts. The first part, the second part is in the issue that's out this week, written by Rodri Marsden, and it's basically about how pop is less about music and more about noises. And so these are the noises that actually built pop, and it starts with the Jerry Lee Lewis piano glissando, where he runs his fingers down the keyboard, and it goes not quite up to date with Cher and auto-tune and so forth on Believe. And so what Fraser's done, I can't believe he's done this, he's actually found an example of every single noise on this list and put them on the website for you to enjoy yourself with and familiarise yourself with, and also add to. So I just thought it'd be interesting to see what are people's favourites that have actually been on this list so far. Alex, you're a musician as well, so many of these noises will be meat and drink to you, aren't they?
Well, I say I am, but my favourite on the list has to be screaming vocals. I used to work in this drinking establishment in High Wycombe that doubled up as a strip bar. It was a strip bar in the day, and then in the evening they used to have loads of metal bands on, and I used to be behind the bar on a Friday night as the bands would come on. And invariably, there would be a little weedy kid coming on going, we're Angel of Death, and they're going, ooh!
So he actually, in this list, he attributes this to Slayer, doesn't he, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
Slayer is a very particular kind of screaming vocal, isn't it?
It is. There are particular genres of scream, you know.
There are many screams in pop.
Indeed, it's an art, you know. There's a certain standard person that'll say, it's just noise, but it's not. It takes practice and, you know, you've got to know what you're going for, you know.
What's the best scream in pop, Fraser?
I think it's going to be Daltrey, I Won't Get Fooled Again.
It has, hasn't
it's
it?
It's just the classic rock
it's
scream.
Just, because it's placed at the perfect position in the tune, isn't it? You know, but you're so right about the Slayer scream being this kind of this otherworldly kind of evil person. It's a noise that no human being would normally make in their everyday life, isn't it?
It is, you know. I know a couple of people who... but...
There's a great clip on YouTube of a heavy metal singer warming up, doing scales with the scream. So he's going, oh, 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 oh. It's a fantastic, playing the piano at the same time.
Who's that?
No one I'd ever heard of, no.
So what's your favourite on the list?
I really like the Daft Punk low pass filter, because I think it's such a clever trick. I'm not sure I could do an impersonation of it, but it's basically, it's turning a knob, and so that the music appears to start from coming from next door and slowly gets nearer and nearer and nearer and then leaps into your imagination. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant trick.
I suppose that's one of the interesting things about this piece, how it starts with musical noises and it ends up with studio noises,
yes,
doesn't it? Mechanical noises, because that's increasingly the way the music's put together. The one that I am, I'm no musician, but the one that I'd still like is number 29, actually, which is the gated reverb drum. as made famous by Phil Collins, yes. and subsequently used in that commercial featuring the gorilla
yes.
and so forth. Can't remember what it was advertising.
Chocolate. Cadbury's.
There you go. And he actually... They used to have a stone room, didn't they? At Virgin Studios, down in the Gold Hot Road, wherever Virgin Studios... Townhouse? The old Townhouse Studios? Ah. I don't think it's still there, is it? I don't know. And they had actually had a stone room to make that sound in, because you needed that to get that very particular Phil Collins sound of a kind of wardrobe falling downstairs.
There's a couple of studios that still have those, actually. There's a couple of residential ones in Wales, I think, that have specific stone rooms just for drums, so they can achieve that bigness.
So anyway, one of the reasons Fraser's put this on the site, and you can find it at wordmagazine.co.uk/40noises,
that's correct.
Is so that people can obviously nominate further ones that ought to be on that list, because this is not supposed to be a comprehensive list of all the noises that built pop, because obviously new ones are being invented all the time. And so we're soliciting your suggestions. I've actually got a communication here that Mike 70s Johnson got from his mate Michael Mann from Streatham, who pointed out that we didn't mention the Vox Continental organ sound.
OK.
Which is...
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, I can't do an impersonation of this, but if you're familiar with Question Mark and the Mysterians' 96 okay. Tears, and if you're not familiar, how were you possibly dragged up, you know? That's the sound of the organ, you know, the thing that stands up on big metal legs, you know. That sound is something we ought to have there. He also suggests the Kevin Shields glide guitar that made the My Bloody Valentine's album so distinctive. Fender Jaguars and Jazzmasters fitted with elongated tremolo arms so that he could hold onto them while he strummed, giving that woozy effect. Does that mean anything to you, Alex?
It does. It tends to be a bit of a flutter, actually.
Oh, right. There you go. And so what do you think should be on the list? Anything you want to add?
I think non-musical noises should be added to the list of musical noises.
You're talking here about what? Sound effects and things?
Basically things that aren't... musical in any way being added to recordings.
But they're used so often that they're almost part of the musical palette, aren't they?
Indeed.
Go on, give us some examples.
One example is the helicopter has heard at the beginning of Oasis's Be Here Now, signifying something really, really important that I never quite tell you what it is.
Bigness. It's all that bigness.
It's all that bigness, isn't it? It's the idea of, you know, we are landing from
above.
This
is going to be epic.
Yeah. Does the record live up to the intro?
Well, I think it's actually quite quite underrated. I mean, with a little bit of editing, you know. Sonically, right. It sounds like you're being slapped around the face with something really massive.
A helicopter.
So helicopter landing, what else you got?
The motorbike.
The motorbike,
of course,
on many of our favourite pop records.
Indeed.
My favourite being the beginning of Love is the Drug by Roxy Music, where you actually hear the biker go across the car park.
You've got the great Bat Out of Hell one, which is actually a guitar that sounds like a motorbike rather than a motorbike.
Very convincing. Interesting. Any more?
Morse code.
Oh, right.
Again, as used by Oasis, inexplicably. No, you know, it's just there.
It's actually, Morse code is probably on loads of records.
It's on the beginning of YYZ by Rush. They tap out the on a cymbal the Morse code landing numbers for Montreal Airport.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got helicopter, motorbike, Morse code, anything else?
The telephone. As used at the beginning of Blondie's Hanging on the Telephone.
Telephone. You see, the telephone ring used to be on loads of records, didn't it? You don't get it anymore, do you?
It's because all phones have different rings, I guess.
You'd have to have a ringtone now, wouldn't you?
Oh, you probably do get that.
Or Crazy Frog.
Yes, I suppose so. Any more?
Finally, guns.
Guns.
Gunshots.
Favourite?
MIA.
Paper planes. Where the percussion is pretty much kind of... is that a Glock? Is anybody familiar with...
I'm no expert in this field.
No, it's not my area. So if anybody would like to tell us exactly which firearm is used on that, we'd be delighted to hear. Fraser, what would you like to add to the 40 noises that built pop?
I don't know what the name of this is, but it's the ska mouth percussion noise. That.
Absolutely.
What's that called?
Yeah, well, I think you've just named it. It's mouth percussion. I mean, because surely it is done by... somebody standing next to the microphone,
I think so.
Making that noise. How else would you do it? It's not an actual percussion device, is it?
A very small chain.
There's other ones that haven't been... that have come up in conversation around the office. The dubstep wobble.
Yep.
Yes. Let's all do that, listeners. You know the thing. You know the thing. Rave stabs.
Okay.
Which are those keyboard things, yep, that out of which rave records are built. And also we're trying to find examples of Italian house piano, which is a bit similar. So anyway, the floor is open to you, dear listener, dear reader, to please add as many as you can there. And examples, you know, things we can actually listen to.
wordmagazine.co.uk/40noises.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
The latest in our Word in Your Ear series of gigs is with a bit of a difference, isn't it, Alex?
It is indeed.
Well, how's it different, Alex?
It's different because instead of being on land...
Instead of being on terra firma...
It's going to be on the water.
On the water. And which particular body of water is it going to be taking place on, Alex?
Old Father Thames.
Old Father Thames. The mighty river through the world's greatest city is actually going to be the home of, for one afternoon only... the date being Sunday afternoon, the 24th of July, we're taking to the water. On what craft are we going on, Alex?
We've managed to procure a Dixieland paddle steamer.
Perfect. Has it got a name?
It's called the Dixie Queen.
Oh, right. I think we should name it the SS Word for the afternoon or something like that. The Dixie Queen, which will be setting off from Tower Pier... And about, what, 2.30, I think, something like that?
Yeah, we'll set off 2.30 sharp, so...
2.30 sharp.
Don't be late.
Don't be late. And it will set off down the river, and you're taking various sites, Greenwich Naval College, the Thames Barrier, the O2, if your heart lifts at the sight of the O2, all kinds of things. You'll be in the company of all of us. And as many Word readers as can get tickets. And also, musical entertainment is taking place on this craft, isn't it, Alex?
Indeed it is, courtesy of a celebrated vaudevillian Hokum Blues man, C.W. Stone King.
C.W. Stone King, the king of the Hokum Blues.
On a paddle steamer.
On a paddle steamer, good grief, with his primitive horn orchestra. So if you close your eyes while you're going down towards the Thames Barrier, you'll be able to imagine... That you're just going around Natchez Trace in Mississippi or whatever, yeah, and that you know that King Oliver and his original jazz band are actually down the end of the boat, and that you're about to have a few hands of poker. I don't imagine we have a license to do that. Anyway, that's what it is. Word on the Water, we're calling it. Yeah, this takes place on Sunday the 24th of July. Tickets are £35 per person. But there's £12.50 for under 18, so, you know, free to bring the family and so forth. There's obviously... What else is going to be taking place? There is a bar there, isn't there?
We're recording one of these.
We're recording
live.
A podcast with the full team. And so you'll be able to witness this extraordinary event. And
there may well be questions from the audience.
There may well be questions from the floor. There may well be audience participation. Huge amount of fun is guaranteed for all, and
I'm going.
Absolutely, I'm going. Also, Alex is going. Mark's going. Kate's going. Mike's going. Everybody's going, and we've managed to arrange. You're guaranteed the sun's going to shine. We've actually fixed that as well, and so it sets off at 2:30, comes back at 5:30, and so you then carry on with your normal business afterwards. So that's Word on the Water, and booking now. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Tickets going fast.
What's the date again?
The date is the Sunday the 24th of July, Fraser.
Okay.
I'm glad
you
asked me that. And if you want to book tickets, if you go to wordmagazine.co.uk/cruise, you'll be able to do it there.
If you'd like to get each and every Word podcast a whole day early, have access to all the hundreds of Word podcasts we've done over the last 5 years, and want to keep in touch with everything going on our website, then you need the Word podcast app for iPhone and iTouch. The Word podcast is the form of entertainment that civilization has been working towards. A bunch of people stuck in a wardrobe talking utter bollocks. Search for the Word podcast app on iTunes. It costs £3.99, practically giving it away, as opposed to actually giving it away, which is what we've been doing so far.
So, Fraser, funny thing crossed my mind when I was reading in the paper about this being the final voyage of the space shuttle taking place this
week. Very sad.
Isn't it? So I haven't followed the details of this, but this is pretty much America saying, we've had enough of this, yeah? We're not going to space anymore.
Yep.
Johnny Russian, you can do it if you want to, yeah?
It's there. There's a lot of it.
And it struck me that, you know, as this era may come to a close, the biggest legacy of space will be not strange kind of chemicals that they find on the moon.
Not Velcro.
You know, not things that power your watch or anything like that. The great legacy will be that space really appealed to pop song writers, didn't it?
Even before we were going to space, it did. It's,
go on, tell us.
Great 1950s compilations of space-age songs full of weird, spooky noises and that kind of stuff, which was well before even the Russians were going up.
I suppose so, yes, yeah. It just appealed to the imagination of songwriters and record makers, didn't it?
Yeah.
What's your favourite space pop song?
It's got to be Telstar by the Tornadoes.
Oh, well, Margaret Thatcher's favourite pop record as well.
Can we edit this bit out? That's fine.
It's a great song. As vouchsafed to Tommy Hibbert.
I just think that's the template for all space songs. Yeah, you have a spooky noise swirling around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Space Oddity, of course.
Yes.
Which is still David Bowie's greatest song, probably.
Life on Mars, that'd be still, my favourite. And it's Space Oddity space as well.
And it's Space Oddity, absolutely. If Space Oddity came on the radio right now, it would sound as fresh as it did when it was made.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary, really, when... Because normally nothing dates faster than future.
Yes, absolutely.
Futurism.
Yeah.
Whereas this hasn't at all. Other favourites, Mr. Spaceman by the Byrds.
Yep.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong.
Well, the last thing you'd want on a space trip is someone misbehaving.
And then, of course, the Carpenters. Calling
out occupants of interplanetary craft.
I mean, which has to be the most syllables ever put in a line in a pop song, pretty much. And so, you know, those will
live. Do you think they wrote that thinking that someone might hear it?
Yes, I suppose it's always got to be in the back of your mind, isn't it? You know, they're always hoping they're going to have the first hit on Mars, aren't they? Weren't we discussing this on a recent podcast? That record contracts...
Territories unknown.
Territories yet to be discovered.
Yeah.
So it means that, you know, if they can settle Mars tomorrow, you're signed to Mars. You're signed to EMI on Mars as well. So, you know, if you've got any further thoughts on space pop songs that are particularly close to your heart, you know, don't forget to share them with us on wordmagazine.co.uk. So big week this week, Fraser. Very busy week this week. Because we're all off to Latitude.
We are, yep.
And now, you went to the meeting the other day. I missed the meeting, which outlined what's going to be happening in the Word Lounge, I think we're calling it.
It's the Word Lounge. It's a new tent for this year, as opposed to our... We've still got our big
stage.
Music stage at the top of the hill next to the Obelisk Arena. We've also got a new tent. There's a much smaller, more intimate Word Lounge, where we'll be providing all sorts of entertainment. I think we're going to do some Q&As... record some podcasts and have a little bit of live music as well.
So if you're going to Latitude, make a point of dropping in.
Yeah, we'll have posters up around the site telling people exactly what's happening and when. But, I mean, a few of the names that I think we've got confirmed include Katie Tunstall, Simon Armitage, C.W. Stunking again, I'm Clute, There Might Be Giants. I think we've got Robert Ince and Lucy Porter coming along at some point, which would be great. So, yeah, there's and also on Sunday we're doing a Britpop podcast with...
It's a heated debate about Britpop.
It will be.
Isn't it?
Mark Allen, Andrew Harrison, who they're both there at the time.
Stuart McConey.
And Louise Wenner.
So that should be good. So if you... excuse me. If you're coming to Latitude, and I do hope you are, again, we guarantee the weather's going to be fantastic.
It will
be. We've got that worked out. And come along to the word lounge down the bottom of the hill.
Exactly.
And we'll see you there.
The Word Podcast. From Marconi to DLT... to this.
And now, as promised, our musical guest on this podcast, John Hiatt, one of my favourite singers and songwriters from the United States, popped into the commodious studio the other day to talk about and plug his latest album, Dirty Jeans and Mudslide Hymns. He's going to be talking about all sorts of things in a moment, including his tenure in Little Village and Nick Lowe and all sorts of things. But first, this song is called All the Way Under.
Have you ever been under? All the way under? Like I have. It'll make you wonder if it don't make you mad, if it don't make you mad. I don't trust a man that ain't been lost, don't trust a woman ain't been double crossed. You ever been under, all the way under, like I have, oh, like I have. Sorry, really sorry for what you've done. Oh, for what you've done. Well, you should call me. Yeah, you should call me. Cause I'm another one. Oh, I'm another one. See what you love me for. You ever been sorry, really sorry for what you've done, or oh, for what you've done. Solid gold. You ever been under, all the way under, like I am, oh, like I am. You ever been broken, really broken, down the side, right down the side.
John Hiatt with his new guitar, playing, what's that song called?
It's called All the Way Under.
All the Way Under from Dirty Jeans and Mudslide Hymns. Let's go back, John. When you first started in the music business, it was a songwriter, wasn't it, working for a publisher?
Well, you know, I moved to Nashville when I was 18, and I really went there because it was the closest place that had music going on to my hometown, and I was too kind of... kid from a cornfield to be going to Los Angeles or New York. They just seemed too scary.
Too frightening.
Yeah, too frightening. And too far away. And so Nashville was 300 miles south. And I'd passed through Nashville the year before and met a guy named Bob Frank, who was a folk singer. He had a deal with Vanguard Records, the great New York folk label. And he was from Memphis. And He kind of was a folk blues kind of singer, and he was living in Nashville, and he was writing for Tree Publishing Company and making $25 a week. So I sort of just set my sights on that. I said, well, if this guy can do that, maybe I can, you know, get arrested, you know, similar situation. So I came down the next year kind of with that in mind. I didn't really know about, you know, the mechanics of being a songwriter per se or writing songs for other people. I kind of had, you know, my own artistry in mind, you know.
And presumably you found out very quickly in Nashville that there are thousands of people in there writing songs.
There, I mean, you know,
the biggest concentration of songwriters in the world.
The mailman writes songs.
Right.
Yeah, everybody writes songs. But,
does that happen, that people kind of pitching songs in restaurants and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's interesting because songwriting is an actual, you know, it's a job that has some dignity to it in Nashville. You know, you're not looked down upon, you know, for being a songwriter. So it has some cachet. You actually kind of feel good about being a songwriter.
Yeah,
so.
I remember reading about, and I can't remember the name of the songwriter, some guy, a legendary Nashville figure. He used to sit in a bar all every afternoon, and he was writing lyrics on cocktail napkins.
More than one of those. But I think you're probably talking about, jet lag has reared its ugly head, but...
Well, we can't remember the name, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can see him sitting at the bar, but...
But I got the feeling reading about him that it was half the battle in Nashville was, could you come up with a title that was kind of catchy enough?
That, yeah, I guess, you know, the old traditional country songs were similar to the great old blues songs. You know, if you had a good title, you had something you could run with.
You're halfway there, yeah.
I was hanging out at Tree, rubbing shoulders with guys like Bobby Braddock, who wrote all the great George Jones songs, He Stopped Loving Her Today, and D-I-V-O-R-C-E, and
right.
Curly Putnam was there at the time. He wrote Green Green Grass at Home. And, you know, I didn't have a clue how to write those kind of songs. I was just a kid, and just being around those guys, though, was, you know, pretty thrilling.
But it is still an area of music, isn't it, country, where songs still have to tell a story, don't they? They've got to mean something.
Yeah, you know, it's been, you know, as country music has gone through its, you know, twists and turns and turned into some kind of, it's a form of popular music now,
yeah.
That's not, really kind of doesn't resemble what country music used to be, as a lot of music doesn't, but it's kind of a different deal, but it still has that same idea. People get together and try and write a song that has a lyric and a story that anybody can kind of get.
What was your first success as a writer?
I got lucky with I made a record within a couple of years of being down there. I got signed to Epic Records through a guy out of New York City named Don Ellis, not the famous horn player, but I made a record for Epic called Hanging Around the Observatory. I had a song on it called Sure As I'm Sitting Here, and Three Dog Night covered it.
Right.
So that was my first real cover. I had a song that covered by Tracy Nelson and Mother Earth when I first got to town. They were there at the time. And that was my first cover, but, you know, it wasn't.
So since then, you've had your songs done by all kinds of people, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been kind of a it wasn't what I set out to do, but it's been a great sort of side career.
Say Bob Dylan did one of your songs.
He did indeed.
Did The Usual.
He did, yeah, for a film that.
He did The Hearts of Fire.
That's the one.
That strange film.
You're one of a few people that actually remember it, yeah.
But Bob Dylan doesn't do many of other people's songs.
No, it was quite long.
Right.
Of course, he's also cut Froggy Went A-Courtin', so, you know. But that's a much better song, too, so.
So who else has done your songs? Did Roseanne Cash do one of your songs?
Yeah, she's cut a couple of my tunes.
And, right.
In fact, that was the first sort of country hit that I ever had. She did a song called The Way We Make a Broken Heart, which Ry Cooder also cut.
Right.
That was my introduction to Ry.
Right.
Yeah.
So Ry Cooder, you famously worked with on... Well, Ry Cooder, Jim Keltner, and Nick Lowe played on your record Bring the Family,
that's
whenever
right.
That came out.
87.
87, yeah. Which is...
Not that long ago.
It's only yesterday.
That's right.
And that then led to the formation of Little Village,
that's
which
right,
was the four of you.
Yeah.
What happened with Little Village?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm sure. I don't know. We just sort of we put it together, and I think there was friction with managers, and I think some misunderstandings that I don't know. Right. I really don't know, but it just kind of imploded. And
because you made a record on, you know, with Warner Brothers,
yeah.
and you toured, and then there was nothing happened afterwards.
Yeah. I think there's a second record that needs to be made, frankly. That's my sort of been my feeling all along. And
what, there's unfinished business there?
Yeah, it feels like it to me.
And do you think that'll ever happen?
I kind of think so. I mean, I'm a hopeful guy.
Right, right. But you still have to get four managers and you have to get everybody going in the right direction at the right time, do you?
Yeah, I think if the guys just talked, it could probably, that's probably the simplest way.
Right.
And I imagine, you know, one of us will have to get off the dime and give the other a call.
But you're all kind of friendly.
Well, actually, I haven't heard from anybody, so I don't know if I'm on the outs or just
they're not doing it without you.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I think Nick and Rye have actually done some shows together.
Right, right. Yeah, well, Nick Lowe, who was sitting where you're sitting only a few weeks ago, he'll probably be listening to this podcast, so, you know, that's
hey, Nick.
The first step. Let's talk about other collaborations. I was looking on the web last night, and there you are. You've done many shows with Lyle Lovett, haven't you? You do these kind of two-handed shows. Tell us how those work. They're very interesting.
You know, yeah, they are very interesting. It's kind of like the Smothers Brothers, if you ever caught that American show. It's a lot of fun. We started doing this songwriter thing about 20 years ago with two other Texas songwriters, Guy Clark and Joe Ely. And I was the odd man out, being from Indiana, but Lyle's from Texas, of course. And we did it originally. This Country Music Foundation actually came up with the idea and put us out on the road. And it was sort of like a workshop, you know. They had a Q&A session and all that sort of thing, and a moderator on stage. And then we enjoyed it so much that we went out the next year and did it on our own as the four guys. And we would do that every couple of years for the last 20 years or so. And then I think about starting 3 years ago or so, Lyle and I just started going out, the two of us.
So there's the two of you on stools kind of thing?
Yeah,
you
we
play
just
alternately.
Yeah, we just swap songs. We've never worked anything out. We've started, if we sing on each other's songs, it's spontaneous, and it's kind of learn as you earn kind of thing. And it's very loose and.
So you sit there and you listen to each other's songs.
Yeah, and we'll sing. We'll join in. I'll play guitar on some of his stuff. And we tell stories and lies and, you know.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's good. People seem to enjoy it.
It's interesting how those kind of things seem to be developing more and more nowadays, that people are finding new ways of doing live shows.
Yeah.
I suppose in many sense are very old ways, aren't
they? Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Well, you know, you can only take the bells and whistles so far. You know, you get the U2,
right, the
360 thing, and you know, where do you go from there? I mean, people, not anything against that, but you know, people like smaller, intimate, more, you know,
right,
more dressed down kind of things as well too. So
you've also been doing cruise entertainment, haven't you?
Indeed, you know.
Go on, tell us about that.
Well, I think the baby boomers took over the cruise industry, you know, they decided that the music sucked.
Because I was again looking at this yesterday. Was it Kayamo Cruises?
Yeah, Kayamo. Yeah, they do
big
this
American company.
Yeah, they put out all kinds of crazy cruises. And
so how does that work? You set off from Florida or something?
I've done it for, this will be my fourth year out of 5 years, and I've done it with the band, I've done it solo, and this year I'm doing it with, we're doing the Lyle and John show, so to speak, and it's a week, and you do like four nights. It's the best gig you can possibly get. You get paid for taking a vacation.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
great
yeah.
singing for people.
And you're wandering around and mingling with the
yeah, I mean, you know, you can't unless you want to just stay in your room and hide, which you know,
right,
doesn't appeal to me. So yeah, you get out and you meet people, and you know, it's nice.
Right, right. No, I noticed that I was looking at it yesterday, and Richard Thompson is doing it now.
There you go.
And I just, the idea of Richard Thompson on a cruise somehow,
that is a little odd.
It's a little odd.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that sounds really interesting. The going back to your record. One thing I want to talk to you about, and I think this record starts with, I haven't got the list in front of me.
Damn This Town.
Damn This Town, yeah. I'm Leaving.
Yeah.
And it ties in with a number of other tracks on this record that so much American music seems to be about leaving somewhere or going somewhere else.
Well, we're collapsing, Dave. We're just trying to get out from under it before it all comes down around our ears. No.
But this has gone on for years,
yeah,
hasn't it? And I think it's so much, seems to me, so much a part of American music. It's almost taken for granted.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we came over from Europe, we were leaving Europe because we'd used it up. You know, we were looking for the Americas to find, you know, we'd used all the timber, we'd used all the stone, we'd pretty well, you know, used the resources of Europe. So we were looking for north of, you know, we were looking for new land. So we, you know, our forefathers came over to America, discovered America, and oh, look, yeah. New stuff.
It's kind of American impulse, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's wander.
Is it a sense of getting away from
We come things? Back, David. We don't just leave.
So how many different places, for instance, have you lived in the United States?
You know, I've mainly lived in Nashville most of my life. I moved there when I was 18. I lived, until that point, I lived in Indianapolis. I moved to Nashville when I was 18. I left in 70, that was 71. I left in 77. And moved out to the West Coast for about 8 years, and I came back to Nashville in 85. I've lived there most of my life.
Right. So you're probably quite unusual, because most Americans, or a lot of Americans, seem to live in various different cities. They move about all the time for job and so forth.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Right.
There aren't any jobs, because in case you hadn't noticed.
Certainly. I mean, there is quite a bit of that in this record, isn't there? Quite a bit of that feeling of things being a bit stuck in the mud. In America.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of the songs came out of, there's all these, there's been heavy weather happening back home. Like, a couple of songs deal with that. Well, Nashville had a big flood last May. And the whole city was affected by it. I mean, it was Katrina-level flooding, you know. It was pretty serious. And a lot of people lost everything, you know, homes and... Yeah, it was pretty devastating for a lot of folks, and our farm got pretty torn up, and I was unable to get to my wife, so that, you know, and it was traumatic, you know. That kind of stuff will really make you think about, you know, rethink your reconnoiter,
So it's like going back to the late 20s and those songs about floods. And,
yeah, kind of, you
and
know.
The crop when, failing
yeah,
and so forth.
You start to reconsider what's important and right. your little sandcastles and how impermanent it all is.
I've got to ask you about your motor vehicles. You've got a lot, haven't you?
No.
No?
Where did you get that?
I thought I read this somewhere, that you're keen on cars.
Love cars, but
right.
I don't...
How many have you got?
Ownership is not necessary for me.
Tell us about your favorite cars.
Oh, well, I love the big clunky old American pieces of art, mainly for the beauty and the sound. You know, they don't necessarily drive well. Great cruisers. I love the old American race cars, the front engine Offenhausers that ran at Indianapolis. I was a kid.
You come from the center of that kind of...
Yeah, so I used to go to the Indy 500 the whole month of May. When I was a kid, you'd go out the whole month and watch them practice. And the front-engine Offenhausers and the old Novis that had the V8s in them, to hear that car coming down the straightaway at 200 miles an hour was just unbelievable sound, you know, just incredible. Well, 150 in those days. That kind of stuff. I like oval track racing, road racing as well. You know, I'm not that particular. I drive a Honda... Element, which is like a little milk truck. I don't think they have them over here, but it's like a little utility vehicle.
Right. Yeah. Do you watch Top Gear?
I do. I love that guy. Those guys.
Which guy?
Well, I like the big tall guy.
Jeremy Clarkson.
He's funny, yeah.
It fascinates me, this, because, you know, we have loads of American TV coming over here, but very little British TV goes to the United States.
Yeah, I watch that show.
Top Gear is clearly a rare case.
I want to go on and do a lap.
I bet.
I want to do a lap.
I think Alice Cooper was on the other week.
Was he?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. You'll have to get your people working on that. That's clearly now, it's the new objective, isn't it, for American entertainers coming over here. Tom Cruise was on it not long ago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there's little hope for me. Between Alice Cooper and Tom Cruise, I don't
do you think you'd do well on the
You know, don't we all think that? Isn't that why we our egos sort of would, yeah, sure, I think I'd do well. I'm imagining I'd be the best, but I'm sure I'll fall short of that if I.
So, what do you like about it? Watching it, is it because it's not like American TV?
Well, yeah, the guys are bright and funny and hilarious, and they make they're more like your friends talking about cars and less like these, American car rags are mostly mostly right wing, crazy people. No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that, but. A little less interesting, let's put it that way.
But it's obviously...
With some exceptions.
It's obviously touched a chord, hasn't it, in America, Top Gear?
Yeah, it enjoys quite an audience.
Right. See, you're coming back in the new year to play.
Yes.
With a band?
Yes.
Does this band have your daughter in it?
No.
Oh, right.
No, she has her own band.
Oh, really?
Yeah, called the Drop Ponies, and she's just finished making a record all on her own. Scraped together the money to do it herself, got her own thing together. I stayed completely out of it.
And what, how old is she?
She's 20, just turned 27.
Right. And her name is?
Lily Hyatt.
Right.
Yeah, Lily Hyatt and the Drop Ponies. Look for it. She's gonna hook up with somebody.
Right.
It's really good.
It appears to be one of those things, one of the few examples of family businesses, doesn't it, nowadays, that musicians tend to... breed other
common
musicians.
Families, yeah, it seems like. Well, I think, her mother has a lot to do with it maybe too, but we've got another kid in the pipeline that's got all kind of things up her sleeve too, so
right.
You just never know with these kids what's going to come up.
So, John, you're going to play us another tune?
Yeah, I thought I'd play a little more of a sort of a ballad. You talked about leaving, how we're always leaving. This is a... This is a song about leaving, saying goodbye. Well, got a tune. It's close enough. Outlast the night, howling at the moon, living in the canyon then, hang down Hannah and Whiskey Jim, dirty jeans and mudslide heels, it all began with soon. Adios to California, nothing to do but turn around. Thought there's someone coming for you. Only way you'd leave this town. Pasadena in the rain, eating donuts and reading. How much longer can my brain set itself on fire? You said that's it for me. Have a little faith that might set you free. But your faith's no good, you see, for me and my desire. So adios to California. Nothing to do but turn around. I always thought there's someone coming for you. Only way you leave this town. Mm-hmm.
cigarettes from the package gone. You must have thought about it just that long. I never knew you were so strong. I guess I never will. So adios to California. Nothing to do but turn around. I always knew there's someone coming for you. Only way you'd leave this town.
Salt, one hand clapping there.
Yeah.
Terrific. John Hyatt, thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave. My pleasure.
If you've been affected by any of the issues in this podcast, go to wordmagazine.co.uk or apply at your newsagent every month.